Welcome to episode 40 of the Fredcast for the week of October the 23rd, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to the 40th episode of the Fredcast. Thanks for coming along on this amazing ride for 40 episodes. Among this week's news, confusion about a recent recall, Pro Tour team shakeups, good news for a disabled cyclist, and a report from the Ironman. Following the news, a follow-up on last week's story on bicycle travel, an update on a recent product review, staying safe once daylight saving time ends, a shout-out, and PodSafe cycling music with a parrot head twist. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to the Fredcast and our 40th episode. I know that 40 isn't usually much of a milestone when it comes to podcasts, but this one feels like an important event to me. I feel like I've hit my stride with the Fredcast, and from your emails, voicemails, and increasing audience every week, I know that you like what the Fredcast has become. I'm really pleased to tell you that I'm working on a lot of great reviews, guests, and interviews for the next 40 episodes and beyond. So thanks for staying with the Fredcast and for staying subscribed. Of course, if you have any comments or suggestions, please feel free to email me anytime. By now, hopefully you know the email address. It's thefredcast@gmail.com. Love hearing from you. Now, let's get down to the news. I know that it seems like the Pro Tour season just ended, but this Thursday is still an important day for the 2007 season. And that's because that's the day that the organizers of the Tour de France will be unveiling the 2007 schedule for the Tour de France. Now, that simply means that what we're going to see is every stage laid out stage by stage over the entire three-week period for us so that we're going to know what the route is going to be. By this point, we'll get to understand which of the riders will be best served by the route, and all of a sudden, all the predictions are going to start all over again. One of the things that's been noted, and VeloNews noted this week, is that in years past, when there's been controversy, at least the French have created controversy when it's come to Lance Armstrong, the organizers of the tour have tended to downplay Lance's role in winning those seven tours that he won. And that certainly happened last year when they unveiled the 2006 schedule for the Tour de France. This year is going to be very interesting to see what happens and see whether or not Floyd Lantis gets any mention, or whether, as VeloNews said, he'll just be an asterisk and an afterthought, and not even mentioned in any of the promotional activities that are going to take place on Thursday, including the review video that's always produced and shown to the various journalists who show up. So more information next week for you on the Fredcast, including sort of a review of the various stages. We know it's going to start in Britain. We know it's going to end in Paris, but where it goes from there is anybody's guess. So we'll see next week. I'll let you know next week on the Fredcast. Well, speaking of the Pro Tour, just a couple of developments that have taken place this week when it comes to Pro Tour riders. A lot of what goes on this time of year with the Pro Tour, of course, they're done racing. They're in the off season. They're on their trainers or they're in the weight rooms. And the other thing that they're doing is they're trying to decide which teams the riders will be with in the coming year. Those riders who have reached the end of a contract or their teams that have folded. Now is time for the reshuffling of the deck to see where they end up. Well, one of the top riders at this time last year and one of the contenders for the Pro Tour Championship was, of course, Germany's Jan Ullrich, who was last year at this time well ensconced in the T-Mobile team. We all know that he had his problems this year with the Operación Puerto scandal, not being allowed to race in the Tour de France or beyond, and he still is under investigation in the Operación Puerto scandal. He announced this week that he will not be seeking a Pro Tour racing license from the Swiss Cycling Federation, but at the same time, he was careful to point out that he does not consider that his career is over. Now, we talked about last week the fact that the Swiss Federation said that they didn't have enough evidence from Spanish authorities to pursue sanctions against Ulrich, although they are still awaiting for more information to be released by Spanish authorities to allow them to look further into whether or not they'll be sanctioning Ulrich. But still, Ulrich continues to protest his innocence and says that he will be back to the world of cycling. If he's not seeking a license from the Swiss Cycling Federation, it begs the question of what sanctioning body he will be seeking a license from. Most likely, I think he'll be looking at the German Cycling Federation. We'll see what happens. And speaking of riders who are implicated in doping scandals, Tyler Hamilton looks like he might have signed with a new and emerging cycling team. This would be the Tinkoff team out of Russia. And the Tinkoff team is led and owned by Russian millionaire Oleg Tinkoff, who is a cyclist himself and a cycling fanatic. The rumors are that Tyler has signed with the Tinkoff team, and I've put a link in the show notes to their fledgling website. Of course, Pat McQuaid had something to say about this, and that's UCI President Pat McQuaid, and he's basically questioning whether or not Tinkoff is making a good decision if they have indeed signed Tyler Hamilton to a contract. And of course, the reason for that is that while Tyler has just come off of his 2-year suspension for his blood doping scandal, he's also under investigation in the Operacion Puerto scandal. McQuaid was quoted as saying that it's fine if they want to go ahead and sign somebody. They can do whatever they want. They can sign any rider they want. But if this rider ends up being embroiled further in the Operacion Puerto scandal or in any doping scandal, they may have signed somebody that would never actually ever be able to ride for them. So we know that Tyler's looking to get back into professional racing. We know that the timing is right because he's just come off of his suspension. But whether or not he's actually with the Tinkoff squad, they haven't yet announced it, but that's what the rumors are leading to. We'll keep you posted. Getting away from professional cycling in the world that you and I do not live in, and getting to the one that we do, especially this time of year, I want to talk about some confusion that occurred on the internet this week regarding the company Light and Motion, well known for making lights for cycling. United States Consumer Product Safety Commission mistakenly posted a 3-year-old press release on their website earlier this week, or last week, stating that the company was going to be recalling some recent lithium-ion batteries for their lights. Well, actually what occurred was that this was a 3-year-old press release. It had to do with some 2004 model bicycle lights. And the CPSC ended up withdrawing that press release from their website and issuing an apology. Nevertheless, Light and Motion on their website, link on the show notes, decided to repeat exactly what that original recall was to make sure that if any consumer should still have any of these lights, to make sure that they could get the new lithium-ion batteries. Those batteries were sold with the Light and Motion ARC lithium-ion HID system with the part number 856-0076A or 856-0081A or the 804-0065A. Basically, the problem with these batteries was that they could overheat and become a burn or fire hazard. So for obvious reasons, they decided to recall them. Again, these were sold in 2003 and in 2004. And if you should have any of these lights, go ahead and click the link in the show notes and you can still contact Light and Motion. And I'm sure that you can get a replacement for those batteries. So don't worry if it was a light that you purchased recently from Light and Motion. Those have not been recalled. Those batteries have not been recalled. But if you do have a 2003 model product, 2004 model product, might be worth taking a look to see if it's covered by this recall. And they have a very good site there on the internet at the Light and Motion website that you can learn all about it. So sorry for any confusion that the CPSC may have caused. Hopefully you're all getting ready for winter cycling with your lights, and we're going to talk about that again in a couple of minutes. Well, this past weekend was the 2006 Ironman World Championship on the Big Island of Hawaii, and here to report on the results of the event, including a blazingly fast bike portion of the event by the winner, is Triathlon Radio's Jeremy Vaught. You can find Jeremy's show at www.triathlonradio.com. Jeremy, tell us about the 2006 Ironman.
Thank you, David. On Saturday, October 21st, 2006, the Ford Ironman World Championships were held, as always, in Kona, Hawaii. If you are not aware, the Ford Ironman World Championship Triathlon is a 2.4-mile ocean swim, 112-mile extremely windy bike ride, and a marathon in the lava fields at 26.2 miles. The men's champion is Norman Stadler, and the women's champion is Michelle Jones. For the German Stadler, this was his second world championship. His first was in 2004. He said of this win, "Winning once is a dream, winning twice, you're one of the big boys now. I'm so proud of myself." And indeed he is. His time was the fastest time in 10 years at 8 hours, 11 minutes, 56 seconds, over a minute faster than his closest competitor, Chris McCormick. Stadler set a new course record on the bike with a blistering 4 hours, 18 minutes, 23 seconds, and held on for the win with a run at 2 hours, 55 minutes, 2 seconds. Chris was coming on fast with a 2 hour, 46 minute, and 1 second run. Now, Jones from Australia was second last year at the World Championships and second at the Olympic Games in 2000. But now, she's at the top. She said she was satisfied with last year's second place finish and that any more wins she gets will just be cherry on top. Well, she's able to land the big one, and in a time of 9 hours, 18 minutes, 31 seconds, which was 5.5 minutes over her closest competitor, Desiree Ficker. Jones ran a 3-hour, 13-minute marathon to a convincing win. This has been Jeremy Vaught from Triathlon Radio at triathlonradio.com, reporting for the Fredcast. Now back to you, David.
Thanks, Jeremy, for that excellent report. I'm still reeling from that time on a 112-mile bike. Just amazing. Thanks again, Jeremy. We appreciate it. Well, here's a story of bad news, good news for a disabled cyclist from Grand Rapids, Michigan, here in the United States. The woman's name is Beth Bailey. She's 53 years old, and she's been disabled from two strokes that she suffered, one in 1980 following the birth of her daughter and another in 2003. The strokes left her with a severe limp and also took away the use of her right hand and also made it difficult for her to express herself verbally. Now, she lives alone and she does get along with the use of a cane, and she tries to take the bus wherever she can. But for instance, on Sundays, she finds that the bus doesn't stop near her house, and so she needs to go about 1.5 miles to another bus stop to get around. Well, a few years ago, she went out and she spent about $540 on a Diamondback 21-speed bike. She had it fitted with adult training wheels as well as a couple of panniers, basically some baskets that she can put groceries and other things in so she can get around. This past weekend, she went to the bus stop 1.5 miles from her house. She locked up her bike with a cable lock, took the bus, and then later in the evening, her sister was bringing her back to the bus stop, and as they approached, she could tell that her bicycle was gone. It had been stolen. And she pretty much assumed that it had been taken by some kids, and of course, she had some comments about that. She felt that it was pretty low, and that she didn't quite understand why kids might want to steal an adult bike with training wheels. Kind of agree with her. But this poor woman, she couldn't get around, and she had paid for the bike with money that she got from her job as well as from her supplemental security income from Social Security, and that money helps assist poor and disabled people. So here's a woman who's on very low income, gets just a little bit of help from the government. She spends all this money on the bike, and it's gone. And it really seemed like a very low and very depressing time for her. The great thing is that this got a lot of press coverage in the Grand Rapids area, and as a result, she's received lots and lots of donations, plenty to replace her bike with a brand new one that will be perfectly outfitted for her. So, you know, for those kids that are in Grand Rapids who were low enough to steal a disabled woman's bike, trust me, karma works. And in case you're wondering where that money's coming from, State Representative William Van Regenmorter, who's a Republican from the Georgetown Township, said that the Crime Victim Foundation, which he created in 1993, is going to help replace the bike. Donations can be sent to the Crime Victim Foundation at P.O. Box 16015. That's in Lansing, Michigan, 48901. I've also put a link to the email in the show notes as well as to the web address. And the representative said that if more money comes in, donors will be asked whether or not that money can be used to help compensate other crime victims. So it is really great to hear when a community comes together to help somebody in need. And I really think that this woman is definitely in need of the assistance. So I'm glad she's going to be getting a new bike. Unfortunately, we've talked a lot on this show about various bicycle versus car accidents that have occurred. And as we all know, usually the bicyclist is the one that loses in one of these accidents. So when I saw this story, I had to bring it to you because it really is good news. And it comes to us from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, in the northwest of the United States. And it seems that they have seen a dramatic reduction in bicycle versus automobile crashes over the last year. Specifically, 10 months into 2006, bicycle versus auto crashes have fallen to just 12 from 25 in the same period last year. That's a humongous reduction in the number of crashes. And they're crediting that to two things. One, a series of new bicycle paths that have been created within the city of Coeur d'Alene, as well as some improved traffic striping on the streets to help keep the bicycles and the cars separated, and the bikes are in the bike lane. So I think that it should prove as evidence to other cities and to other places around the world that with a little bit of attention paid to keeping cyclists safe, just like some of the other stories that we've talked about recently, all sorts of things from bicycle bells to bicycle lanes and better bicycle lanes. Remember the one that we talked about down under that was spectacular, if you looked at the link I gave you in the show notes, all the way to a recent story that we talked about where there have been several locations around the country where they've increased the distance that's required for cars to stay from bikes. So a lot of examples here for ways to keep cyclists safe, and I hope that this trend continues and that more cyclists are kept safe by more municipalities, more local governments who finally have realized that it's dangerous out there for us cyclists and they need to do more to help protect us. And with that bit of good news, that's going to do it for the news for the week of October the 23rd, 2006. Well, if you've been listening to the Fredcast since the very beginning, way back last December 2005, you'll recall that one of the first shows I did, we talked about a 2006 holiday gift guide. And all of that came from my own experience and my own ideas about some great ideas for the holidays for 2005. This year, I want to solicit your ideas. I want to know what ideas you have about some great gift ideas for your fellow Freds, some ideas that the significant others and spouses and boyfriends and girlfriends and mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and daughters and sons and everybody could buy for their favorite Freds in their lives. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to send me an email. But don't send this email to the regular email address. This is going to be a special email address just for the 2007 gift guide. So what I want you to do is I want you to send an email to giftguide, all one word, GIFTGUIDE, giftguide@thefredcast.com. Let me know what products you would nominate for this year's gift guide. And if you can, try to give me an internet link to the product that you're recommending. And if you want to, you can send me an audio comment with your idea for the gift guide for this year. So go ahead and send an email to giftguide@thefredcast.com, and I will be choosing at least one email at random just before I actually air the gift guide. And that one emailer will be receiving a prize to be determined at a later date. So please get your ideas in soon. I'd like to get your ideas no later than November 20th, 2006, so that I can get them all put together into a show well in advance of the holidays, so that all of our favorite Freds can get all of your favorite gifts. Thanks for doing it. Thanks for participating. Your fellow Freds will thank you too. Next up, I want to do a follow-up to the show we did last week where we talked about traveling with your bike, and I talked about the various ways to travel with your bike. And a couple of things that I didn't mention that came to me from listeners. First, one thing that I thought of that I really should have mentioned, and that is the possibility of a folding bike. Now, I talked about folding bikes when I interviewed Josh Hahn from DeHaan at the outdoor demo at Interbike a few shows ago. So go ahead and take a listen to that, because as Josh explained to you, he's got some really great designs for bikes. Not your traditional folding bike style, but more of a traditional bicycle style that you might be used to. And obviously these can go on an airplane without the extra charges that we talked about. So that's one thing that I neglected to mention last week. Something else came to me from listener Jay from Texas, and he sent me an email, and he said, in your podcast about traveling with your bike, one option you didn't discuss is bringing your bike on the plane, but not having to pay oversized luggage fees. It is possible. He says, my wife travels almost every week for her job, and I travel probably 15 times a year for mine. Plus, we both do triathlons around North America. These are not active people at all, as you can tell. When she got her most recent bike, she paid extra for the bike to be built with S&S couplings built into it. Now, by the way, I'd heard of these before, and I've actually seen people with bikes before, but I haven't had a chance to talk to them about their experiences, so it was great to get Jay's email. He says, these are specially machined couplings that are done on the top tube and on the down tube. These couplings can be retrofitted onto any round tube bike as well. With the frame now being able to come apart, we're able to fit our bikes plus wheels and shoes, bottles, etc. into a regulation size special hard case. No extra fees. Also, there are special couplings for the cables to allow them to come apart. The bikes look and ride just like normal. And he also sent me a link to some photos on his site. Now, I've put a link in the show notes to the S&S Machine website where you can learn more about these couplings. And what was amazing to me in going to the website was I was thinking, gee, this isn't something that I'd want to go for because they couldn't possibly fit this onto carbon fiber bikes. And guess what? I'm wrong. They can. So this is another really great idea. If you're somebody who travels a lot and you want to take your bike with you, the next time you're looking to buy a bike, especially if it's a custom bike, this might be something that you might want to look into. So that, I think, is a great idea. And then finally, I got a tip from listener Frank in Ohio, and he says, I listened to your latest podcast today on my ride and wanted to chime in about traveling with a bike. I flew to Las Vegas to do a century ride in Death Valley with my brother about 2 years ago. I have the luxury of having more than one bike, so I shipped one of my road bikes to him a couple of weeks before. Then he was able to ship it back to me. I would suggest not shipping pedals, shoes, seat bag, and helmet with the bike, but rather carry them in a carry-on bag so that if the bike should get lost, either by the shipping company or the airline, you could still rent a bike and have some familiar components to put on it. And I think that that's a great tip. Thank you, Frank, for sending that in, because the last thing you want is if your shoes and your pedals don't make it. If you've got to rent a bike, you don't want to have to buy new shoes. You don't want to have to buy new pedals. You don't want to have to buy a new helmet or any of the other things that you can imagine that you'd like to have with you. So, Frank, great tip. Something I definitely should have mentioned. That's why I love you, Fredcast listeners, because you're always coming through in a pinch. So, just a couple more things to think about when it comes to traveling with your bike. Now, I also want to do a follow-up to a product review that I did recently. You'll recall that I had reviewed several months ago Venture Design Works GelBot water bottle. And remember, this is the water bottle that also has the integrated reservoir for gel, so that when you're on a long ride, you just have one container where you can get just gel or just water or both. And we also interviewed one of the members of Venture Design Works at Interbike in one of the shows I did a couple of weeks ago. Well, I got an email from listener Brian, who told me that he had had some issues with the caps on his GelBot and the tolerances of the plunger cap that goes into the reservoir for the gels. And so I followed up for him with my contact at Venture Design Works, the gentleman that we interviewed at the show, Anthony. And what was great was that Brian had already contacted Anthony, and Anthony had already taken care of his problem, which I thought was fantastic. And here was the email that I got from Anthony from Venture Design Works. And he says, "I've been in contact with your listener over the last couple of days. After talking with him, my theory is that the problem may be that his bottles were dishwashered a few too many times. And this is important for those of you who may have purchased GelBots after listening to my review. Anthony says, we recommend washing with soap and water, not using the dishwasher, because the cycles in the dishwasher can be very hot and can alter the tolerances of the GelBot to the point where it might not work right." So there's a really good tip for those of you who have the GelBot. Don't dishwasher it too many times. The great thing for Brian, though, was that Anthony and Venture Design Works have a really excellent warranty program. So if, according to Anthony, if you've got a problem and you contact them, they're going to take care of you. They are one of these companies that cares very much about taking care of their customers and making sure that their customers have 100% total satisfaction. That is refreshing in 2006, and if that truly is the way Venture Design Works operates, then it makes me want to recommend their products even more. So kudos to Anthony and to Venture Design Works for taking care of listener Brian. And listener Brian, thank you for emailing me so that we could help you take care of the issue, because the last thing I want is to review a product, give it a favorable review, and then have any of my listeners be dissatisfied with that product. So, Brian, enjoy your GelBots. And Anthony, thank you for taking care of a Fredcast listener. Well, it's that time of year again. This coming weekend, we set our clocks back 1 hour and are plunged into the darkness known as Standard Time. Personally, I hate this time of year. And I wonder who came up with the term standard time, since this time is anything but standard for those of us who do our training in the afternoon and evening hours. Well, with the sun going down sooner and the darkness descending earlier, this is the time of the year when the already unsafe streets of Los Angeles and other major cities around the world become even more hazardous. Let's face it. We're already invisible to many motorists, even when it's high noon on a summer day and the weather is severe clear. So, what are we going to do if we don't want to be relegated to the indoor trainer all winter? Well, we outfit ourselves and our bikes for riding at night and find ways to increase our visibility to motorists, joggers, dogs, kids, pedestrians, everyone else that's out there that we share the roads with. Now, some of this stuff may seem really rudimentary for some of you out there that have been riding at night for years and years, but I happen to know that there's a lot of Fredcast listeners out there that when this time of year comes up, they don't ride at night. And if you do it, you want to do it safely. And so I've got a couple of tips that you should definitely consider before you go out into the darkness next week. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about reflectors. Now, every bike sold in the United States and many other countries came from the factory with front, rear, wheel-mounted, and pedal-mounted reflectors. Of course, the first thing most of us did when we assembled our bikes or brought them home from the bike shop was immediately remove those reflectors. Now, I know they look goofy and you think your buddies on the club ride are going to think less of you, but if you can find those reflectors, this is the time of year to put them back on your bike. Typically, you're required to have a white reflector at the front of your bike, a red reflector in the rear, and amber reflectors on the pedals and spokes. So, if you're so inclined, this is one of the best ways to make sure that you're really visible to motorists out there. Think about finding those reflectors, put them back on the bike. Now next, and possibly even most important, we come to lights. Now while your bike came from the factory with reflectors, it most likely didn't come with lights. There are a wide variety of lights to choose from, and in fact, I'm working with various lighting manufacturers to do a bicycle light roundup on a future episode of the Fredcast. But until then, let's just talk about some real general things that you need to keep in mind. Now, some of this stuff may be required by law where you live, so I'd urge you to check your state, federal, local laws to find out what you need to have. And while the laws will vary, most places require you to have a white, unbroken beam on the front of your bike and a red, steady, or flashing light on the rear. As I said, there's a wide variety of choices here, so let me give you my opinion on what I think works best for me and what I think is safest. Personally, I prefer to have one or two small battery-operated lights mounted onto my handlebars. Typically, I prefer rechargeable battery lights because they tend to burn brighter than alkaline lights, and I'm not searching around, do I have AA's, do I have C's? The batteries are the ones that came with the light, so as long as they're charged, I'm in good shape. Now, if I have two lights, I like to have a steady beam that shines down onto the pavement in front of me so I can see potholes and any other obstacles that might be coming up. And I like to have a flashing white light that's aimed at about the eye level of oncoming motorists. If you only have one light on your handlebars, then my personal preference would be that if you're in a, sort of a traffic-y area, someplace where there's a lot of cars, then I would aim that light at the eye level of the motorist to make sure that you're seen, make sure that you're visible to the motorist. And then when you get to a less populated area, maybe someplace that doesn't have as many streetlights, that's when I would aim that light down onto the pavement in front of you so you can make sure you can see obstacles. I also like to wear a helmet mounted light. Now I know this, you know, you end up looking like one of the seven dwarves, but I think that it's something that you should consider, and I'm going to tell you why I like it. To me, the great thing about a helmet mounted light is that it illuminates the area in which I'm looking. I know that seems like common sense, but sometimes you don't think about it. For instance, I ride in the Griffith Park area of Los Angeles, and I've oftentimes heard something kind of rustling in the bushes as I'm heading up a hill. And where this hill is, for those of you in LA, you know the hill I'm talking about, there's a lot of brush, and it's sort of a woodsy area. And I happen to know that there's coyotes that live there, and potentially bobcats and mountain lions. I'd like to know what's rustling around in the bushes next to me. So all I have to do is turn my head and look in that direction, and the light follows me and I can see what's there. So that's one reason that I like it. Now, another reason I like having a helmet mounted light is that it's really easy for me to signal drivers who might otherwise not have noticed me. All I have to do is look in their direction and aim the light at their window. And okay, now listen, I know that this might sound rude, but it works. Imagine, if you will, you're heading down a street, and coming perpendicular to your direction is somebody coming out of an alley. They're not expecting to see you on a bike at night. They're looking for cars. They're looking for headlights. So when I see that car coming, I immediately swivel my head and point my light right in the driver's window. And every single time, they stop. This works exactly the same if you see the taillights of a car that's parallel parked. Aim your light at the mirror of that car. Your light is going to signal that driver that says, don't pull out. You might kill me. It works. And this is one of the reasons, just another reason why I like to have the helmet mounted light. Let's face it. Like I said, this might sound rude, but it's going to ensure that the careless driver that's leaving a parking space or an alleyway is going to see you before they have a chance to plant you underneath the wheels of their Oldsmobile Buick. Okay, so as I said earlier, I personally prefer rechargeable batteries, but one caveat when it comes to rechargeables: be sure that you've given your light a good charge before you head out for that long ride. I have had, and I'm not ashamed to say it, I've had my light conk out on me halfway through a ride, and I can tell you it is no fun trying to get home when you can't see where you're going. What's really cool about some of the newer lights that I saw at Interbike this year is that some of them have a low battery mode. And the way that this works is that as the battery gets to a certain charge level, it reduces the power of the beam on the light. That's going to allow you to see in front of you, albeit the light's not going to be as bright, and it's going to extend the amount of time that the beam will stay on, as opposed to some of the older lights, like one of the ones that I have, where when your battery drains, that's it. You get no warning and your light turns off. So I like the fact that a lot of these newer lights have a low battery mode. And as I start working on the roundup of the lights that are coming in for review, I'll make sure that I let you know which ones have that feature, because I think it's something that is definitely worth paying for. Now, as for your taillight, There's a bit of controversy and disagreement about whether or not your red tail light should be a steady beam or whether it should be a flashing beam. Some cities require a flashing beam. Some cities require a steady beam. So this is one of those things you're going to want to check into when it comes to your locality. Personally, I prefer a steady light that's mounted to the back of my helmet. You can buy a relatively inexpensive red light that you can mount right to the back of your helmet, maybe with some Velcro. And then I also like to have a flashing light that's mounted to the back of my seat. I personally mount mine to my saddlebag. But either way you go, you definitely want to have at least one red light on the back of your bike. The reason I like two is that, again, if you've ever been driving your car behind a cyclist, we are not incredibly visible, even with that one flashing light. So, being somebody who believes that there's safety in numbers, I like the idea of having two. Finally, one of the things that I want to talk about, and one of the ways that you can make yourself most visible at night, is your clothing. Now, tonight on my way home, I saw a perfect example of good reflectorized clothing. As I'm driving down the street, there was a guy out for his evening jog, and he was wearing a reflector vest, reflector pants, reflector anklets. He had a headlamp, and he had red flashing lights on both arms and on his back. There was no doubt that anyone was going to run him over in their cars, least of all me. But of course, at the same time, I think the guys in the International Space Station were probably complaining about the glare. Nevertheless, when it comes to reflectorized clothing, I personally wouldn't, I don't know, this is sort of where I draw the line on geekiness. I'm not the reflector vest kind. Instead, I really like the Illuminite clothing that you can buy. What I like about it is it's cycling specific. It looks like a regular cycling jersey or regular cycling shorts in the daytime, but at night it's very, very highly reflectorized. And so I really would recommend this. As a matter of fact, I've put a link in the show notes to the Illuminite website where you can take a look at these clothes. And I think you'll agree with me that they look like regular cycling clothes, but at the same time, they're going to keep you safe out there and give you a lot of reflectivity. Now, if you don't want to go that route, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the anklets and the armbands that are reflectorized, because again, that's going to give you a great deal of visibility that you might otherwise not have. Now, a couple of other ideas. Again, some of this is common sense, but some things that you might want to consider. Number one, when you go riding at night, do not wear your darkest cycling clothes. It's the last thing you want to do. We are not cycling ninjas. Don't wear your black clothing at night. Instead, you want to be seen. So wear as much bright clothing as you can. Another idea a friend of mine told me about recently was that he went out to a hardware store and he found some reflector tape. This is reflector on one side and sticky on the other. And he puts it on his crank arms. He puts it on his seat tube. He puts it on his down tube. He puts it on his chainstays, any place he can on his bike. And in the daylight, again, it's virtually invisible. But at night, he is very, very easy to see. So that's another thing you might consider. Now, of course, don't forget your helmet. And if you like, put some reflector tape on your helmet. Your buddies on the club ride are not going to notice that reflector tape in the daytime. But at night, the motorist that you're trying to avoid will definitely see it. Another thing to consider. Finally, be alert when you're riding at night. There are just a lot of obstacles that are very, very easy for you to see in the daytime that you may not readily see at night. This could be anything from potholes to puddles to dips in the road to other cyclists, joggers, walkers, dogs, kids. Just be as alert as possible. If you are someone who likes to ride in the daytime with an iPod, if that's legal where you live, my recommendation is leave the iPod at home when you go riding at night. Riding at night is already adding an extra dose of potential danger to your daily ride. Don't make it worse by not being as alert as possible. Finally, riding at night can be really enjoyable. It can be very peaceful. There sometimes are often less people on the roads, so you may get a better ride. If you're going to do it, please, for your sake, for your family's sake, for all of our sakes, do it safely. Make sure you make yourself as visible as possible. Be real alert and have a great time. Okay, one last thing before we go tonight. I just want to send one shout out to listener Adam from Alaska. Adam emailed me because he had heard the latest edition of The Spokesman when we were talking about winter cycling tips. And I sort of seemed like a bit of a wimp because here I live in Southern California. And to me, if it gets below about 60, 55, I pull out the trainer and tend to ride inside. And Adam actually completed the Iditarod bicycle race. And he sent me a link to his posting about his experiences doing the Iditarod. And I told him how much it reminded me of those Jack London stories I always loved so much. And so I'd encourage you to read Adam's blog posting. I put a link in the show notes. And I just wanted to say hi to Adam and thank you so much for making me feel even wimpier for being a Southern California boy who won't go outside when it dips below about 55 degrees. Well, that's going to do it for the show tonight. I want to thank all of you for listening and for staying subscribed for these 40 episodes. Trust me, I have many, many more to come, so stay subscribed and help keep the show successful by telling your friends. Do me a favor this week. As my friends Kristen and Aaron at the Manic Mommy say, tell three friends this week about the show. And if you can't do that, go to Podcast Alley, vote for the show, or place a review on iTunes. I know lots of you use iTunes to get the Fredcast, and there is a place there where you can post a review, and I really would appreciate that because that's very helpful in helping us bring in more listeners. Of course, I do like it when you communicate with me, and there's lots of ways that you can do that. You can send me an email or an audio comment in my email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can communicate with your other fellow Fredcast listeners at the Fredcast forums, and that's at forums.fredcast.com. Of course, you can send me a voicemail anytime. Our voicemail line is 206-203-FRED. And if you'd like to send an audio comment and not use your email, go ahead and click the link on the left-hand side of our website. And the web address is www.thefredcast.com. We're going to end tonight, as we always do, with PodSafe cycling music. And this is a repeat artist, one of my favorite PodSafe music artists. Of course, our PodSafe music comes to us, as it does every week, from music.podshow.com. This week, it's Ocean Street. They have a new album out. This song is called Hold On. It's from their recently released debut CD, and I've put a link to the band's website in the show notes. And one of the things I really love about this song is the fact that their video was filmed at Lulu's at Homeport, and Lulu's is owned by none other than Lucy Buffett, the sister of that well-known singer, songwriter, raconteur, Jimmy Buffett. And Lulu's is in Gulf Shores, Alabama. So here's Ocean Street singing Hold On. Thanks for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. 40's just the beginning. I hope you enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Shining through the haze. Oh, maybe you see me on the other side dreaming, and I will carry you away. And if you hold on to me, I'll make you believe in everything we can describe.
thing we can't describe. When you fall, I will leave. If it's dark, we will see. There's a long road to the middle, and I know we'll pass by.
Down Under, that was spectacular. If you looked at the link I gave you in the show notes, all the way to a recent story that we talked about, which I can't remember. Ah, now I remember.